Hi everybody, my name is Christine and I am an alcoholic. And it's a pleasure and an honor to be here for speaking, and especially when it's a celebration in Chris 1 year. Wow, it's truly a gift. And you know, you have your son here and his significant other, and you know, it is a family disease. And I didn't know that until I came to these rooms. So, and Phil, thank you for asking me to speak. I'm thinking, I met Phil, I saw Phil Freedom Group on Tuesday, and out of 200 alcoholics, he seemed to find me, you know, to speak. So anyways, thank you so much, and Hillary, your wife, here to support you as well, so that's beautiful. So, you know, this is truly a very friendly group, and it's one of the very first ones that I came to, and, you know, I came here very, very confused, and not knowing what was going on in my life, and you know, this room embraced me, and you know, I can't tell you how much AA has changed my life, and it has saved my life. And you know, so what I'm here to tell you a little bit about my experience, strength, and hope, and I can just hope that somebody, you know, will hear something in my message that will help them, you know, just a little bit. And And honestly, if you don't find something here, there's so many meetings. You know, we're so blessed with so many meetings in Ottawa. I think there's like 130 English and 40 French. And so, you know, when I used to make lots of excuses not to go to a meeting, there's, you know, really not an excuse. So anyway, so tell you a little bit about myself. I was born in Montreal, December 64. So I recently turned 50. And it took me a long time to find these rooms. I'm looking at some of you young people here, and I'm just thinking, you know, good for you for finding these rooms. Like I said, unfortunately, it took me a long time. Just took me a long time to realize things. And I grew up, I'm the youngest of three. So I have two older brothers that are, you know, quite a bit older than me. And they weren't really in my life very much. And two parents that were born in Germany, and they came to Canada looking for a better place. And so, you know, and they did what they thought was right. They started, you know, having children, and but things didn't work out for them, and they got divorced, and I was deemed that accident child. And you know, it's hard hearing that sometimes growing up, you know, always being the accident. And for whatever reason, my mother's anger and resentment was turned on me. So I dealt with you know, different abuse growing up, and you know, but I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't understand until I started doing the steps that I had issues with, you know, my dad leaving and abandonment and things like that. But that's what the steps in AA have taught me. It's taught me a lot of the stuff that I just didn't know. So you know, growing up, I was pretty much on my own. My mom was working a lot, and I always seemed to find my own way. And you know, a lot of it was I found trouble a lot of times, and I don't know, it kind of followed me around. And, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends. That feeling of, you know, that you hear, I had this feeling that I didn't fit in. I didn't fit in. I was always on the outside looking in. And it's hard to describe, but I always, I just, even around people, I just was never comfortable. So, you know, that's what was in my mind, though. And then, you know, at the same time, I was a very tall girl. So, you know, I was always tall. So, you know, going into school, I was I never fit in physically. So, you know, I was always standoffish and just thinking, well, you know, this is how it is, and I'm just on my own, and I'm a loner, and you know, all this. So, and never comfortable in my own skin, you know. So, growing up, you know, and so I was about 12 years old. And in high school, and I'd been playing basketball a few years, and, you know, I was starting to become more comfortable. But, you know, and then I was being introduced to some parties, and, you know, and lo and behold, that's where I found alcohol. And it did for me, you know, what I thought was everything I was looking for. I started to be comfortable, you know, I started being able to speak with people more, and, but it wasn't a solution, you know. I put my addiction before everything else. And unfortunately, you know, I had a chance to go further in basketball. I had some good opportunities. I was somewhat being scouted, and I threw it away because, you know, basketball got in the way of my drinking. And so you know, that's just how it was for me. And so I tried a couple of geographical cures. I went to Los Angeles, thinking, you know, it's going to be so much better here because I'm going to see different people, and this is going to be the answer. And you know, again, I'm still drinking, and you know, I'm trying to make my mark in the world, and I'm trying to do some modeling, and it's because, you know, people are going to notice me out there because, you know, I always thought I was special. And it's funny how people know when you have a problem. You know, even when I'm in denial, people know you have a problem. So, you know, I was always so unhappy, so depressed, and I thought, well, this isn't for me. So I left Los Angeles and I went to Toronto. And, you know, I tried different things, you know, and my alcohol seemed to stay with me. But, you know, when I tried to do some modeling and stuff, they said, well, Christine, you need to stop drinking and you need to lose some weight. And it's like, I don't know how it works for me, but my addictions are like a shelf in front of me, and it's like, okay, so I'm going to put up the alcohol, and I'm going to pop out pops my eating disorder. And then I started smoking, you know, so it's just like, for me, I didn't realize, you know, it's like, oh, I'm not drinking anymore, but I'm just having another problem with something else. And, you know, I was such a big people pleaser all my life, and I didn't realize it, that, you know, I'd do everything what anybody told me to do. I'd do anything for anybody, but I wouldn't do anything for me. And, you know, so going along in life, and, you know, so I met my husband in Toronto, and I thought, that's the right thing to do now, is to get married, right? And he's such an awesome guy. A lot of people in the rooms know him here, and he's not an alcoholic, and he supports me so much, and he stayed with me all these years, and I still can't figure it out, but you know, that's why I say it is a family disease. And so anyways, what we started doing is we started having kids, and you know, I stopped drinking for that amount of time, and still not realizing there was any problems, but you know, I'm an extremist, so I'm either all in or all out. So I'm either all drinking or I'm doing something else. So I'm putting all my time and energy into my children, and you know, I'm not with friends, socializing, just with my kids. So they sort of became my addiction. And you know, when they started going back to school, they didn't need me anymore. So back comes the alcohol, and it's just a perpetual, just roller coaster ride. And I'm, you know, I'm still thinking, oh, I'm looking good on the outside, but I'm a complete mess on the inside. And so, you know, I had a hard time, you know, accepting that I was having some problems with alcohol, because I really wasn't that daily drinker yet. I was doing binge drinking, and you know, I thought I was doing okay because I still had my job and things like that. And but little did I know that all that stuff was crumbling around, you know, just in the background. And you know, I've been married 20 years, and my husband's living in the other room, and we're in this $700,000 house, and I have the bank accounts are, you know, empty, and I have credit cards, 30,000 here, 30,000 there, line of credit, 70, using all our RSPs, like, and I didn't see anything wrong with it, you know. And so what alcohol did for me is it, you know, it left me bankrupt, not just financially, but mentally, spiritually. And, you know, and my husband would say, you know, you have a problem with alcohol. And I would just tell him, you know, screw off. I'm doing my own thing. I'm not hurting anybody. Leave me alone. You know, little did I know, my kids stopped talking to me. You know, my kids are all in their 20s, and, you know, we don't talk to you, Mom. Why bother? You're not going to remember tomorrow. I'm having blackouts. You know, and, you know, my husband's, like I said, we're just about done. But he wouldn't leave me because he wouldn't leave me in this state, because I was so crazy. I was so crazy. I was doing chaotic things. You know, when I said I wouldn't drink that day, I don't know how I end up in Montreal or Toronto. No idea when I said I wouldn't drink that morning. And, you know, I tried some of that controlled drinking. You know, we go out for dinner and he'd say, okay, Christine, let's just have two glasses of wine. I'm like, okay, I'm good, I can do this. You know, I'll have the first glass of wine and it goes down okay, and then the next one I can feel it. I'm getting all restless, irritable, discontent. I'm just starting to get really anxious. And, you know, and then I'm done. And if I can't drink the rest of the night, I'm taking my husband's head off, and I may as well be drinking because I'm a mess. And so what happened to me was I crossed that line of social drinking, and I became a daily alcoholic, daily drinker. And, you know, I couldn't think of anything else but drinking, and nothing else mattered. My family didn't matter, nothing mattered. It's always about getting that next drink. And so what happened was I did my bottom was a crazy, chaotic day of complete drinking, running to Kelsey's in the pouring rain because my husband said not to drink today, and I said, screw you. And, you know, just oblivion. I drank till, you know, I couldn't drink anymore. And you know, in my mind, I'm telling the waitress, I'm like, okay, it's okay, I'm walking. You know, I could manipulate anything. And anyways, I cracked my head open at some point, and I had a concussion, and I knew I needed help. You know, I tried treatments, I had tried psychiatrists, and nothing seemed to work for me, because it was like it was drumming up all this stuff, and I just couldn't deal with it. So my first attempt at coming into AA was in May 2013, and I came into a group, Stepping Ahead in Orleans, and they just embraced me. And for the first time in my life, I felt at home. I felt nobody judged me. They welcomed me. And even though I was so confused, I had no idea what was wrong. They just said, Christine, just come in and just stay. And but, you know, I didn't do what was suggested. I didn't do that, you know, do meetings, you know, get a sponsor and do the steps. And I still had the cotton balls in my ears and the receivers were off. But I was there. I was there. And, you know, I was thinking, I'm going to get this through osmosis. You know, you guys are just going to help me get better. And, you know, didn't work. Didn't work. So, you know, after 6 months, I'm back out. I had a relapse and it was even worse. And, you know, I don't know anybody that's gone out on a relapse saying, that was the best relapse ever. You know? It wasn't for me. So I came back, you know, my sober date's December 19th, 2013, and I'm like, who gets sober before Christmas, you know? But the Alcathon kept me sober, and we're so lucky, you know, I'm so lucky, there's a lot of people there that just said, Christine, just keep coming, and they kept me sober through the Christmas holidays, right into New Year's, you know? But guess what? I got a sponsor. I started doing the steps, and my life started changing, you know, just a little bit. And so step one for me, you know, that I admitted I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had been unmanageable. And I still didn't understand the concept. And my sponsor now has described it to me in such a way that it's so clear that powerless is that I don't have the power to stop drinking. My kids don't have the power. My husband doesn't have the power. I don't have the power. So I need to find that power greater than me. And that unmanageability is that, if anybody's been to the Big Book Friday night meeting, they tell you about that spiritual malady. And it's like, that was me. That was me. I had this big hole in me. Sasha, this Russian guy in AA, spoke about this big hole in him. And he's, you know, from Russia, drinking vodka. And I'm like, that's me. I have this hole too. So I didn't realize that spiritual malady. And, you know, so step one is that I don't have the power to stop drinking. My life is totally a mess. I can't manage anything. I can't be a sister. I can't be a mother. I can't be a friend. I can't be anywhere on time. I can't pay bills. I'm just a mess. So, you know what? Okay, I tried doing it my way. Let's try it a different way. And, you know, it wasn't God for me when I first came in. It didn't sit right with me. But you know what? I just took all of you and all your love, and I just embraced it. And it started to grow in me. And so step one, two, three is our foundation. So step one is the problem, but there's always a solution. There's always a solution. And that's in anything in life now. My kids are not in AA. But, you know, if there's a problem with their brakes, they find out what it is, they go to the garage and get it fixed. They don't just, you know, don't have any brakes. So there's always a solution for everything. And so I don't stay in step one. I love step one meetings, though. It grounds me, keeps me coming back. to, you know, because I never want to forget what happened, but I'm always in the solution. So that's my higher power that helps guide me every day. And page 25 in the big book, it tells us where our higher power is, and it's in our heart. And it says our Creator lives in us in a miraculous way. And if I just tap into it every day, it's like plugging in my cell phone. If I don't plug it in, it's not going to work. So I plug into my higher power, and I have that foundation, and I have step 1, 2, 3, and I'm like, you know what? I'm ready to give up my way of doing things. Let's just do it your way. And so then I move through the steps, and I'm in step 4 now. And oh my God, step 4, everybody's like, oh, Christine, step 4, it's so hard because I have to look at me. And not really realizing that, I didn't even have to look at me. You know, I blamed everybody in the world for all my problems. And so when I'm pointing my finger at you, there's 3 pointing back at me. And I'm like, oh. Okay, so I start to do my step 4, and now I'm doing it in a way that my sponsor, who I was introduced to from a lady in this room who came from Vancouver, I was struggling with this once, and she said, I have a guy named Right On Ron, and he's in Vancouver, and he's my sponsor today. And, he's changed my life teaching me the steps. And that's why I encourage anybody who doesn't have a sponsor. And I struggled with women's sponsors, but it wasn't their problem. It was my fault because I hadn't had a chance to look at me. And I wasn't good in relationships. So for whatever reason, this works for me. But he's taught me step 4 so clear that it's changed my life. It was the eye-opening moment. So step 4 is my resentments, my fears, my sex conduct, and my harms to others. And I could have 1,000 resentments on my husband. You know, yeah, he hurt me. Doesn't really matter. It's like, what was my part in it? I didn't communicate. I was angry. I was avoidant. I was jealous. I was selfish. You know, and I go through all my resentments, and all these things keep coming up in my inventory, and I'm like, oh my God. These are my patterns and behaviors. And I'm like, wow, I had no idea. I had no idea. Because I was never looking at me. You know, I'd look in the mirror and I'd always say, I'm looking at the problem. But I look in the mirror now and I'm actually looking at the solution as well. So, you know, step 4 is getting it on paper. Step 5 is sharing it with another human being. And so God already knows. My God, I call my higher powers God now. I know already, but it's something about talking to somebody and getting it out, something about verbalizing, and it's amazing. So, you know, but 4, 5, 6, 7 all go together, because what happens is step 6 and 7 is about asking God to help us remove our character defects. And so I have all these, you know, I'm dishonest, I'm angry. It's like, well, I try to do the opposite, and I have a list that shows me, instead of being dishonest, try being honest, Christine. You know, instead of lying, you know, be honest, instead of being sneaky or whatever, because I had all these terrible, you know, but they don't all go, you know. Controlling's a hard one for me. I like to control the universe, you know. It's very exhausting sometimes, so. But, you know, life's so much better for me now that I know there's this road in front of me, and it's always been there. And it's a road that my higher power has had for me, but, you know, I get distracted very easily, so. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, shiny penny. Oh, there goes Christine off the road, you know, drinking, you know, doing my own thing, you know, screwing around, making a mess. And then it's like, Christine, get your ass back on that road. I go, okay, I got this now. But I need to plug in. So I need to plug into my higher power. And, you know, I start my morning every morning with just some, I'm very simple. So it's God direct my thinking. And that's because it gets Christine out of the way. And Christine's very negative. I can see, I could look at the negative in something all day. So God direct my thinking, and I see the good in everything. And I moved through 8 and 9 is making our amends. And I didn't realize there's different ways of making amends. You know, I wanted to make my amends all in a week. I'm like, oh my God, I'm in AA, I'm better, I want to say I'm sorry to everybody. And it's like, you know, it doesn't work like that. So there's direct amends, and there's indirect amends, and sometimes it's just changing your behavior. So you know that guy that I was with? I don't go seeking him out to make amends, because that's not right. It's going to hurt my husband. you know, what are my motives? So, you know, but it's about cleaning up my side of the street. So if I happen to see this guy in a grocery store, I come up and I say, hey, I'm sorry, man, you know, for anything I've hurt you with or done, and I move on. You know, it's about love and respect, and that's what the steps have taught me. That you know, that perpetual quest I was looking for was love and respect, and it's what I give to you guys now. But I also had to love and respect myself. So the first person on my step eight amends list, and step nine when I had to make the amends, is me, because I hurt myself. You know, I didn't eat, I drank, you know, I did some pot and stuff, but I hurt myself. You know, and then I you know, go through my list, and I, you know, I've already done my kids. My kids said so many times to me, Mom, it doesn't matter. You can say it as many times as you know, but it's until you change your behavior. So now they're so proud of me. You know, they're back in my life. You know, I make coffee for them. Well, you know, we spend a lot of time together. And I'm truly blessed. And, you know, so then there's the rest of the steps. There's 10, 11, 12, which is just living our life every day. And that's what the steps have taught me. And that drinking is but a symptom. And it was just to mask whatever I wasn't feeling right about in me. And so now I do a daily inventory all day. I kind of have a look at my behavior, and it could be just right from, you know, holding a door for somebody, or I helped a guy up the stairs here. And it's because at the end of the night, I read page 86, and it's a reflection on the day. It's actually more important to me than the morning one, which is still on 86. So for me, I have to look at, how did I do today? You know, was I loving and respectful for others, or was I selfish? You know, did I pack as much into the stream of life as I could? And then I can put my head down on the pillow at night and sleep, you know, because I'm not in guilt and remorse and shame, which is that spiritual malady in the beginning, because, you know, the drink is just here for me too. You know, I only have a daily reprieve as well. But it's based upon my spirituality. So my sponsor says to me today, he's like, Christine, are you going to drink today? And I said, no. He goes, why not? I said, because I'm spiritually okay. I'm okay. But if I'm not spiritually okay, I'm here. Because Dr. Silkworth, in the doctor's opinion, says I have a problem with my mind and I have a problem with my body. So that's the obsession and the allergy that you hear about in the doctor's opinion. And that's in the big book. And it's right in the beginning. Some people start at page one. Well, it's in the Roman numerals before that. So I recommend you read it, because I didn't. I'm like, oh, you start on page one. So, you know, what happens when I stop drinking, though? I stop drinking, and I'm here. I'm stuck here. Oh, my God, that's a terrible place to be. Terrible. And, you know, so I don't like to stay there. I like to stay in my heart. So my sponsor says, Christine, stay in your heart, because that's where God is. And I go, well, I have to think a little bit. Like, but it's the concept is just, I think, the connection from my thinking to my heart. And that, you know, in my relationship today, my husband and I were doing so much better, and it's because I know my behavior. I know to communicate. I know to say I'm sorry. It's not always his fault. And it's amazing. And, you know, my coming to these rooms and even him listening once in a while, he learns stuff. And so, you know, step 11 is prayer and meditation. So there's that little bit of prayer you heard that I do. And then meditation is, I haven't quite conquered that yet, because I really don't understand the concept, but I just know that prayer is speaking to God, and meditation is listening. So if I think that God speaks to me through people, then if I just stop and actually listen to what each and every one of you just have to say to me for like 2 minutes, I may learn something. Because each and every one of you have something to tell me. And, you know, finally the cotton balls are out of my ears and the receivers are on. And my world now, which, you know, it used to be just me in my closet with my dog. It says, do you ever drink alone? It's like, no, I drink with my dog, right? No. Now my world's so big. It's so big. I have so many people in the rooms. I do a lot of service. That's step 12 for me. Step 12 is the greatest gift, and I can't even understand it because I was the most selfish person in the world. You know, I have numerous sponsees. And I've seen them change their lives doing the steps. I've also seen people that have somewhat done the steps and don't do them, and don't practice these principles in all our affairs. And what happens is they stop going to meetings. And, you know, the old thinking comes back. That's what happened to me. And I go to default, and I'm back in that spiritual malady. So if I'm not always moving forward, I'm staying still. If I'm not staying still, then there's that chance of moving back. So, you know, and I just kind of want to leave you with, you know, that perpetual quest for me was love. And I didn't realize that I love you all. And if I don't love you, then I don't like you. If I don't like you, I probably have a resentment. If I have a resentment, that's the number one offender that will make an alcoholic go back out and drink. And I can't even afford that anymore, because I have too much at stake now, way too much. And, you know, I'm going to Atlanta this year, AA's 80th celebration. I'm like, look at me. Oh, my God, I'm going to be in this auditorium with, like, 80,000 people. And my world just keeps growing, you know. And I can't explain it. Well, I can. I just, anybody new or questions anything about how do I do this, or it's in the steps. And I always think of an analogy that maybe Phil could relate to. It's like going to the gym. And this is the gym, right? This is the gym. Sorry, Phil. And, you know, I have this exercise plan, but I just go in there going, hey, Alfonso, you know, hey, Fraser, you know, and I don't do anything. I don't do the work. I never pick up a weight. I'm not going to get the results. And it's that simple. If I don't do the steps, and I don't do them 1 to 12, not 1, 3, 6, 12. I got to do 1 to 12 in that order. I'm not going to get the results and have that spiritual awakening that it says. And that's all about change, changing our behavior. And I kid you not, I am not the same person I was 2 years ago. I am not that same person. But I know all that stuff that I did, and I own it. But I can learn from it and move on. So thank you so much. I love you. You know I do. And keep going, Chris. And then glad to have your son and his girlfriend here. Thank you so much.